Well, hello everyone. I'm Jill Bloom, publisher of Building Enclosure, and I'm so excited that everyone's here because I am going to be having a great conversation today with Kristen Capel, who is the Green Programs Director for Energy Diagnostics. And I just want to welcome you, Kristen. Thank you so much for joining me.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Kristen Capel, mom of two boys. I live in Indianapolis, Indiana. I've been the Green Programs Director for Energy Diagnostics almost 5 years now. Specialize in multifamily sustainability, consulting, verification services, lead for homes, NGBS, EGC, enterprise communities, Energy Star, Hearst ratings, all of that good jazz. So my job is to help consult for project teams and then help verify and certify their projects for green programs.
Fabulous. We definitely have a really good background in that. So we're excited to share some insight. How are multifamily utility analyses completed?
So you look at information that's the base version of this, information that's given to you from HUD, along with the local analysis for utility allowances for the area. So HUD dictates a lot of that, and that's what a lot of teams tend to do. There's also an alternative where you can actually model them and have somebody, which tends to be a little bit more lenient. And then the comparison, whatever the offset is between kind of the average utility use of the area and the utility use of your project, the project can then be subsidized that amount of difference between utilities. So it's a good ad for affordable housing projects. A lot in the Midwest tend to use these as ways to help supplement ongoing income for the property management and the upkeep of subsidized housing.
Very cool. So what would you say are some of the biggest benefits of these audits?
So I think, honestly, the money. The biggest thing that I think, or that I know that teams get from this, a lot of times there's a lot of influx in money when a project gets started. There's a lot of influx in money when a project gets rehabbed or it gets funding through QAPs or Section 42s or 9% or 4% tax credits. The ongoing maintenance of these buildings can be a struggle because the rents are subsidized, the rates are set. So it's not like they can just go out and increase the rents when they need a new roof or they need, you know, ongoing maintenance for these buildings. So that is usually what the funds from these utility analyses are used for, is then the general upkeep and maintenance of these buildings.
Got it. And so what are some of the projects that you're working on now?
Ooh, all over the place.
And I know, I want to hear about it.
Yeah, all over the place. We have two projects going on in Texas right now. We just started a project in Pennsylvania. We've done stuff in Tennessee. Our primary market really is the Midwest. So I'm based in Indianapolis. The rest of our headquarters is in Valparaiso, about an hour east of Chicago. So we do a lot of Indiana work, a lot of Michigan work, a lot of Illinois work. So those are our three pieces right now. We're also starting to do some stuff in Ohio. We've done some stuff in Wisconsin. We've got a couple things going in Iowa. And then again, we focus really on, we do utility allowances. We started doing 45L tax credit work. And then we really have a focus on National Green Building Standard as a green program. Lead for homes, we have green rating and QAD, upper level verification for lead for homes projects. As well as we've got several EGC Enterprise Green Communities projects right now. The new 2020 has been kind of a learning curve. So we've delved into a few projects using that, which has been exciting. And that's primarily what we do. We do small projects. We've done 12 unit duplexes. We do communities of single family homes, all the way up to a 12 story downtown urban infill. With hundreds of units. So we kind of run the gamut. Yeah, I think the largest project we've done, 400 and some odd units in eight stories, is the biggest one in terms of units I can think of. And then we've got some taller ones, and then we've got kind of our little baby projects, but everything is kind of a labor of love. So nothing is too big or too small.
Yeah. Which one's been sort of, would you say was been like your favorite project that you guys have worked on?
Honestly, I am a lover of history. I'm a lover of like adaptive reuse buildings. We've done button factories. We've done coffin manufacturing.
Oh my gosh.
Where we rehabbed it into senior housing. It's so cool. So much history. I've learned so much about these little, especially rural and these really small towns and in historic areas across the Midwest. I did a pattern mill project in Connersville, Indiana, which was a fabric manufacturing plant at one point in time that was adaptive reuse and really exciting, wonderful, beautiful building. So those are always my favorite because I love the history in them and I love the stories behind them because the teams make a really concerted effort to make that a fundamental component of the project.
Oh, for sure. Like if those walls could talk, right?
Right.
A button, that is so cool. A button manufacturing facility.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We have buttons.
Yeah, right.
Oh my gosh. So what's the latest with green multifamily design?
Oh, the latest. So we've been seeing a lot of solar ready. We've been seeing a lot of push for net zero through QAP, because again, I specialize in affordable housing. QAPs and funding is very heavy on pushing for net zero. All electric has been a huge push here lately, especially in areas like Michigan that have been very gas intensive in the past. Mm-hmm. There have now been a lot of local utility and jurisdictional pushes for all electric in the hopes of kind of bridging that gap between gas dependence to potentially being energy independent with the use of solar panels later. So we're seeing a huge push in that. So in general, that's kind of where we're seeing things go. A lot of interesting stuff with manufacturing. We're starting to see more plant-based manufacturing. Panels have become huge here in the last, probably the last decade, but here in the last 5 years, I most of our projects are all panelized now. And shipping containers, like how exciting those are. I know I've seen them out west a handful of years ago, but we're starting to see them kind of get integrated here in the Midwest. So that's kind of been an exciting new unique challenge for me. I always like being challenged. I like new stuff. So we have a couple projects. We have one here in Indianapolis that's going to be building about 30 of them in a neighborhood
they're taking shipping containers and reusing them.
Yeah. So they're from Canada. So they go through a plant in Canada that finishes out the insides, the cabinets and the fixtures and all of that jazz, ships them down here. And then they do the spray foam and the outside finishes on site. So you've got, same time you've got your on-site people putting in foundations and your slabs and things, the panel shop up north is finishing them out and rolling them out, and then they ship down here and then they finish the outside when they get here. I have never seen anything like that before. And so I kind of geek out about it because that's the stuff that I love.
Well, that's so cool. So does it even look like a container when it's all done?
No, it really does. I mean, it's square. In that aspect, but overall, they really look like a lot of the area that they're going in Indianapolis has a lot more contemporary design. So I'm not going to tell you it's going to fit into, you know, historic downtown areas, but in the areas where they're doing a lot of this new contemporary, new generation, a lot of areas doing economic development and things like that, they're doing these kind of new designs, and they're beautiful. And I don't think you would know unless somebody told you that that's how they got started.
That's so cool. And so what are they using them for? Is it more commercial or is it more like family? Is it everything?
These are housing. Yeah. These are single family houses. Yeah. So they're turning into their two bedrooms and they're being used as affordable YTEC funded housing. So very exciting.
Well, you see shipping containers all over the place, especially, you know, when you get close to some of the ports, and there's millions of them. It seems like millions of them, right? So how cool that they're finding a way to use those.
Yeah, for sure.
So outside of that, do you see any other current trends going on?
I'm trying to think. So solar has been huge here in the last year. Like we have
let's talk about that for a second, because solar is one of those things that it's just like, you know, it seems like it should be so much easier. And sometimes it seems like there's all kinds of benefits to do it, you know, from the government. And then it seems like they're not there. And then it seems really expensive. And then it seems like companies are going out of business, but then like, where are they coming from? But when it comes to solar, it's such an awesome thing. And there's so much growth that's happening.
Right. There's so much potential for it. And depending on where you're going, and I hear all sides of the spectrum in conversations about it. A lot of times, especially with managed projects, affordable housing is one, but even in market rate situations where the management company pays for the utilities for the common spaces and the corridors and the hallways and stuff like that, solar is huge on that side, because they'll install solar just to offset those communities. So in those situations, it works for them on an ongoing maintenance and an ongoing payback. The payback period on them has gotten less and less. Most of our projects now is anywhere between 5 and 7 year payback. So there's been a lot more to it. And then every project I do, I strongly recommend, even if it's not in your budget, to do solar right away. Running the conduit, have it net zero ready, is absolutely worth it. Super inexpensive, makes it so much easier in the future to add those panels later. It doesn't make sense not to do it, in my opinion.
Oh, so, totally, absolutely.
Yeah, you'll spend way more money trying to retrofit later.
Oh yeah, we all know what that's like. Do not retrofit.
Right.
Well, let's talk about Enterprise Green for a minute. What criteria is necessary to meet Enterprise Green programs?
So Enterprise Green has 2020 is the new version that has come out. There tend to be a lot of community organization components to it. They want to have community feedback. They want to have community support. So there's administrative requirements regarding those aspects. There's also material and equipment requirements that you put in, so green flooring, cabinets, paints, adhesives, being low VOC. There's, you know, obviously requirements for your air quality. There's energy requirements. You have to be Energy Star certified on any new construction project under EGC, or HERS certified under any rehab or adaptive use project that's running through the project. And then Enterprise is kind of an all or nothing. So they're mostly prerequisite based, with some additional credits that you add to get certified, but you either certify or you don't. So that's probably one of the fundamental areas where it differs from some of the other programs. So there's not a tier base within it. There's not silver, gold, platinum. So it's you certify or you don't. So it's very prerequisite based, and then with additional supplemental points that go in to get the certification.
Got it. So something else I wanted to ask you, in 2020, there was 27 states that required affordable housing developments to receive public funds to comply with Enterprise criteria. Do you see other states that will be adapting to this as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's slowly but surely. We see it a lot here with Indiana has been surprisingly one of the first integrators of green programs into the QAP. It's how I was able to start my own business, how I got into what I'm doing now, because they had started integrating this, I mean, almost 20 years ago now. So we're seeing more and more even Midwestern states starting to adopt these requirements and pushes. There's been a huge push from banking and funding side of things to get greening their portfolios, greening their lots of projects and things like that. So there's a push kind of from that side as well. Kentucky, Tennessee, we're seeing them add components for green building. Michigan is now has a push where additional points are available if you do net zero. So we're seeing not just the integration of green program requirements, but also the continued push of better. So I love that we haven't seen a stagnation of it where they just, you know, oh, well, that's good enough. We're seeing a continued push to really make it a priority.
Yeah, it's exciting to see what's happening. So what state, you've mentioned about a bunch of different states, like you're just saying Kentucky and Indiana and all these other states like Michigan, but what state currently leads the way in green multifamily design?
I feel like it's a cop-out, but it's probably true. California, Oregon, Washington, the West Coast. Okay. Yeah. Point that because of Title 24, which is their, you know, energy code that they use, they have their own versions of green programs, because green programs that are based for the other 47 states are too low for their standards. So if I were to take the green programs that I used here for projects in Indiana and took it there, it wouldn't even meet the code. So world difference. So they definitely have the market right now. But we're seeing a lot of movement on the East Coast. New York has a big push. Chicago, for being the Midwest, has the most green roof square footage of any city in the country.
Right, Chicago?
Yeah. So we're starting to see more and more of this in the Midwest. Obviously, major cities have more of a chance and more of a foothold to be able to do these things. But we're seeing it start to be adopted across the board, which is really great.
Yeah, you know, when you see cities like Chicago, it really is cool. Well, a lot of these big cities, it's awesome to see how they are utilizing that roof space and adapting, whether it's to the, you know, a green roof or putting something up, just to utilize the space, because it's so awesome to do that.
Yeah. Chicago has requirements now that either you put a green space courtyard for tenant use, or you put some kind of restaurant or bar. So there's rooftop bars now all over the place.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. We were looking for one of those last night here, even in Michigan, but it's like, where's the top? Who's open? And we want to go sit. We want to view. We want to see, you know, it's summer. It's Midwest. It's a, you know, it's, summers are short up here, and there's nothing better than rooftop bars for sure.
Yeah.
So where do you think we currently stand on that path to zero?
There's work to do.
I
think it'd be naive for me to say that like we're almost there. We've got a lot of work to do.
I mean, that's a big ask. You know, path to zero, you know, come on.
Yeah. And especially in areas where lots of areas in Michigan, Chicago, that where gas is cheap, it's readily available. Mm-hmm. It's a hard push to make to move to all electric in situations like that, where that's kind of what's always been done, and it's what, you know, to cheaper, and you know, so there are a lot of things that go into making those changes and pushing that kind of towards the right way. But it's nothing we haven't been up against in some form for, you know, all the time we've been trying to do green buildings. So I feel like it's just a continuation of the fight that, you know, people have had for years now in trying to get green projects up and going and mainstreamed and things like that. But the foothold is there now. So it's not like we're trying to, you know, invent the wheel, which I think is the best thing we have, is the fact that we at least have people willing to listen to green ideas and have those conversations, whereas before you weren't even, you know, allowed in the room. So I think there's work to be done. I think getting closer to net zero, having things be PV ready so that we can put panels on, having the prices come down, the efficiency of those have been going up and up and up. So you can get more bang for your buck in terms of what you get installed. The longevity of them is better than they were 20 years ago. And most of this country absolutely can use solar. That's one of the biggest things I hear is that, oh, well, we don't have enough solar days, or we don't get enough. Germany, predominant source of energy is solar, and they don't have any more sun days than Northern Michigan does. So there really is no reason across the country that we can't adopt those and start implementing those in projects, even if it is maybe a little more slowly, but surely.
So what would you say from you personally, what are you the most excited about that you see in the future?
I will say the reuse component. Again, I think the
you know, it's probably hard to pick. I'm like,
putting I know, it's so hard to pick. I think the reason why I love the shipping containers is the same reason why I love like the historic and adaptive reuse and stuff, is like the new life, like generating new life from something that was old, something that was used or going to be thrown away or whatever, and giving it new purpose. I think it's, for me, it feels very personal, but also I think it's just, I don't know, it makes me really hopeful to see that, because seeing value in things that maybe not everybody sees value in, and investing yourself into it and investing your time and energy and money into something to bring it back to life, but then everybody sees the value in it, I think is just huge. So I love how we're doing more of the reuse. We're reclaiming abandoned warehouses and schools and these kind of areas that you would think might be condemned or just kind of left to the side, and we're revamping them and giving them a fresh start again, and bringing back stories and history that has maybe been long forgotten, and bringing them to the forefront again to kind of reteach new generations of people about the past. And in the embodied energy, I think, you know, there's always something to be said about the time and energy, you know, that was put in to create it in the first place, and you're continuing to use that ongoing. So it's almost like having their work from 100 years ago still being a part of your life today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for all that you're doing and all sharing your insight with everybody. If anybody has any questions, how can they get a hold of you, or where should they go look for information?
So Energy Diagnostics, we have a website. I think it's energydiagnostics.com or energydiagnosticsinc.com. Apologies. Okay. You can reach me. I've emailed Kristen, CHRISTIN, at energydiagnostics.net. You can, my office phone, 765-412-2099. I answer all the time. So
oh, that's awesome. Yes. Well, we definitely want to help people get in touch with you when they have questions, and support everything you're doing. So thank you again.
Very welcome.
Definitely appreciate your time. And thank you to everybody who's listening and watching. And if you have any questions for us, you can reach us at buildingenclosureonline.com. And while you are there, make sure you sign up for free. It's all for free. Our register for our website, check out our new platform for our e-magazine, our e-newsletters, register for all our webinars that we do, because we love to help make sure that there's a plentiful array of CEU webinars for everybody out there. And please stay safe and healthy. We look forward to seeing you next time.